Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Good morning and welcome to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchisepreneur who owns one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. Today, we have a great show. We're meeting with franchise attorney Nancy Lenard, and Nancy's going to discuss what a franchisee should look for in reviewing the lease for a franchise location and why it's important to use an experienced leasing attorney to do that review. Nancy will also address some of the new changes in the disclosure document, now referred to as the FDD. And the law offices of Nancy P. Lenard have been helping businesses grow for over 25 years, and that's coming up in segment two of Franchise Interviews. Our first segment is being brought to you by Franchise Interviews LLC, and Franchise Interviews gives you an up-close and behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews, as well as get inside tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Our weekly franchise radio show on Blog Talk Radio, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and franchise attorneys. And our monthly franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise. And Don, welcome back to another edition of Franchise Interviews. Spring has certainly sprung today, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a beautiful day here in, I guess, our part of the country, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. It's beautiful.
It's a perfect day today. Yeah, I think it might even hit the 80s, they said. So
after the show, taking the rest of the day off, maybe.
I think so. I think we should do that. Our last show, Don, we got to meet with a very special guest, Dr. Robert Needham, and he's the president of Franchise Inc. And for almost 30 years, Franchise Inc.'s principals have been helping folks develop their business concept into a franchise. In addition, they match prospective franchise buyers to the right franchisor or business concept to achieve their dream of owning their own business. And Dr. Needham has written an industry-endorsed book on solving the puzzle of owning a franchise. I thought it was a very informative show last week. Any thoughts on last week's show?
Yeah, he's like really the reason that we have a show like this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's an expert. I was impressed, of course, with his company, and just been in business a long time. I definitely plan on reading his book. Had a lot of valuable information he gave out on the show.
He sure did. You know, one of the advantages of recording our show, you get to actually go back and listen to it later. I actually listened to it a couple days ago, actually picked up some things that I actually missed during the show. I mean, he just threw out a lot of great information.
Right.
I like how we asked him what changes have been taking place in franchising, I guess, over the last, because he's been doing it like 30 years. He mentioned that the brick-and-mortar buyer is becoming more sophisticated and challenging because of the strategic planning it takes. You know, you can't just, let's say you buy a Subway franchise and you don't like the location 3 years later. You know, you can't just simply pick up and move, So
right.
A lot of thought has to go into, and Nancy's going to talk about the whole leasing thing today as well. But a lot of planning goes into the whole location factor, doesn't it?
Right, yeah. He talked about, I guess, ethnic diversity, some of the changes in franchising,
mm-hmm.
the multi-unit owners. Most people come into a franchise with a goal of owning multiple, locations or units.
Right. Absolutely.
And then the whole international aspect of franchising and how the Internet, I guess it's helped so many different industries, but certainly in franchising.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you discussed that last week as well, the whole growth in international franchising. I saw just yesterday, I don't know if my facts and figures are correct, but I think Burger King is opening up like to at least 200 units in China. I don't know if you saw that.
Right, yeah, I did see that article.
You did, okay, yeah, so it was correct. But China's just exploding right now,
Yeah, and his company is needed. It's interesting. Because franchise systems, their specialty is their business, their industry, but they're not specialists, for the most part, in selling their business.
Right.
And I guess really outsourcing a sales department to, a company like Dr. Needham's is, has a lot of benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. They're not a they're not a referral broker either, Don. They coach the client. They go through the whole site selection process. They actually stay with their clients, I think, until they're off to training, whatever franchise they select, So
right.
They spend a lot more time with the client than from anything I've ever experienced as far as franchise brokers go.
Right.
He also gave some great advice to aspiring entrepreneurs. Every show we ask our guests, what advice would you give to an aspiring entrepreneur looking to buy a franchise? He gave a great answer that I actually wrote down the other day. He said, find out who they are, kind of like taking a self-assessment. What do you want this franchise to do for you? And there's that old saying that people don't buy drills because they want a drill. You know, people buy drills because they want a hole, and the same thing applies to franchising. People buy a franchise not because they simply just want to buy a franchise, but because it's a vehicle to their dream, you know. And I think we mentioned this on last week's show. I thought of Fish Window Cleaning right away, you know, that these two gentlemen, you know, they didn't buy a franchise just to buy a franchise. They bought Fish Window Cleaner. They bought into that franchise system because it was perfect for their lifestyle, you know, that they knew that they wanted to spend a lot more time with their families. And that's
right.
Exactly what Fish Window Cleaning has done for them. You
right.
know? So just thought it was very interesting. You know, a lot of times we have some great quotes from our guests, which is why I guess we've been pushed to, you know, eventually write a book at some point as well.
I thought it was interesting, Marty, because we had never heard this before. I guess it's a bit of a unique approach when someone's investing in a franchise. Don't do one, possibly do three or four. Diversify your
services.
That was
clever, wasn't it? I've never, you know, since you and I have been doing this, I've never heard. I think he called it a multi-concept operating company. He abbreviated MCOC. And you're right, Don, where he says, you know, instead of, you know, typically when you buy into a franchise opportunity, let's say it costs you $250,000, you know, why not get into like a lower type of cost franchise opportunity? It's actually plural, opportunities, you know. So as you just said, you know, buy into, let's say, three or five franchise opportunities, you know, such as I think the example he gave was like, let's say, a toner franchise, an overnight express franchise.
Right, a few different business
supplier.
Services.
Right, exactly.
Try and make your business a little more recession-proof. But when you're diversified, you know, I've always been a big believer in that.
Absolutely. You've always, as long as I know you, you know, you've always been diversified, you know, not
right.
putting your eggs into one basket.
Right.
And that's kind of interesting if you think about it, because if you sell one piece of the business, you know, if you own five different types of franchises, you're not totally out of business then, you know what I mean? Where,
right.
for example, if you just bought a Subway and then you sold that, well, you're out of the business. You know, you're kind of starting all over again. Well,
now, plus you have more of a chance to really fall in love with one of the services that you have.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I thought that was a very clever approach. And again, he called it multi-concept operating company, you know, and I know Dr.
Right.
Needham's going to send us some information on that because it is a little different
approach,
than
yeah.
you've experienced, you know.
Yeah.
So I just thought he was an incredible guest. You know, I'd definitely like to have him back. And he made that great offer to our listeners as well. He'd actually give a free copy of his book.
Right.
You know, so I'm actually going to get that up on the website this week as well, you know, so our listeners can take advantage of that because we have had several emails on that already. So
right. Yeah, we've been on a little bit of a roll here. A lot of good guests, as usual, and some really great educational shows with that.
Absolutely. And it's been interesting, you know, because I have to be honest, I wasn't totally familiar with their company, you know, and they've been around a very long time. But after
right.
having them on the show, I was very, very impressed. And I think you felt the same.
Yes.
That's great. Well, what do we have going on today, Don? And I guess over the next month.
Yeah, to have stuff lined up as usual today. Nancy Lenard, who we had
right.
on, I guess, about a year ago. And she'll talk a little bit about the leasing process with owning a franchise in space.
Such an
and talk
topic,
about the.
Yeah.
changes going on with the UFOC and FDD. On May 1st, Marty, we're going to be meeting with John Cipolla of the Franchise Opportunity Verlo Mattress Factory Stores.
That's an interesting one, isn't it? I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I've been seeing John recently at a few of the franchise shows. Very nice guy, so that'll be coming up next week. On May 15th, we'll be meeting with the franchise called Rita's Ice.
Yeah, that's right. Big fan of Rita's. You know, and we've been talking about getting them on the show for a long time now, you know, and
right.
here we go, you know. We're actually going to be meeting with the CEO of the company, and I wouldn't be surprised if Connie and I and the baby actually head over towards Rita's house because, you know, it's just 2.5 miles from my home, you know.
Especially if it's a hot day, yeah.
Yeah, and especially on the hot days, and it's that place is always packed on. I mean, I went there last week, you know, it's like a
yeah.
frequent thing now, and...
Yeah, so that'll be exciting. On May 22nd, Marty, we're meeting with our friend and franchise expert, Joel Labava, who's also been on our show in the past. He's been in franchising for about 15 years, so he'll have
great.
A lot of good stuff to talk about.
And he actually just wrote a book as well, you know, so Joel's going to be talking about that.
Right.
So, yeah, just interesting all the franchise authors we've had on the show, you know, since
right.
we've actually started. I think you mentioned last week it was like six or seven now, you know.
Right.
You know, but... That's great. So we have a lot of things going on, don't we, over the next month?
Yeah, people who are looking at investing in a franchise or an existing franchise owner looking to expand, diversify, whatever. I mean, these are all experts and success stories. You know, you're not going to want to miss them.
Absolutely. Well, if you remember, Don, you know, speaking of franchise authors, when we had Joe Matthews on our show, I guess it was, God, it was about a year ago.
Yeah.
Joe's the author of Street Smart Franchising. He defined franchising as a relationship, and I always thought that that was an excellent definition for franchising. And this is something from the IFA Franchise Relations Committee, and it's called Improved Communications Means Improved Franchise Relations. And it's by Bruce V. Bloom and also Steve Nelson. And obviously, I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's like 40 pages, but there was just some interesting tidbits of information in there that you can actually download if you go to franchise.org. And franchise.org is the IFA franchise website, and it's just full of so much information. You can actually take a test on franchising.
Yeah, it's a great website.
It really is. Gerald Ford once said, "If I went back to college again, I would concentrate on two areas, learning to write and to speak in front of an audience. Nothing in life is more important than the ability to communicate effectively." And that's really what this whole packet of information is about. This little section here says, why do we need to improve our communications? Let's just go over a couple things here. It says our working environment is forever changing, and you know, you and I have been talking about that frequently. There's a growing emphasis on team management and empowerment of employees. In order to be effective and produce with these changes, you need to be an excellent communicator. In the franchise world, the relationship that exists between the franchisor and the franchisee is also growing, and it's also changing. For this relationship to achieve its objectives, each party needs the fundamentals of good communication. Every franchise system, no matter how large or small, needs to provide avenues for franchisees to share ideas. And you and I have spent many shows talking about the importance of that as well.
Right.
Or their questions or their concerns with franchisors. Moreover, franchisees need the assurance that their ideas will be taken seriously. Otherwise, learning how to communicate effectively and spending the resources to create an effective way to communicate will be wasted. So it just emphasizes the whole packet, emphasizes the importance of communication, how to do it, and you can actually get that from franchise.org website. But, you know, you and I have referenced a lot of stories of great ideas coming from the franchisee.
Right.
Example, what, Filet-O-Fish? There's been so many of them. I mean, there's a whole list.
Right.
If you go back and listen to our show. So just very, very important.
Yeah, definitely. That's very interesting. I'll have to read that.
Yeah.
I got something here, Marty, interesting. In the May issue, a Vetrepreneur magazine, in their Franchising Basics part of the magazine, it says, "What is Discovery Day?" I'm surprised we knew, didn't really kind of talk about this in the past. We've mentioned it, but really not in detail. It says, Discovery Day takes the emotion out of entering a franchise agreement and lets a franchisee know if a particular concept is a good fit.
Right.
This is by Rhonda Sanderson and Robert Steitem. It starts off, the possibility of purchasing a franchise is an exciting one for any prospective franchisee. In the typical franchise sales process, one of the most exciting yet sometimes intimidating steps of the purchasing process is the Franchise Discovery Day event. Typically, this ranges from an hours-long to an all-day meeting held at the franchise company offices and involves meeting with both a franchise salesperson and management of the franchise company. You may meet one-to-one or as part of a group. You may also meet a franchisee or visit a company-owned or franchise location of the company's business. Discovery Day is an opportunity for both the prospective franchisee and the franchise company to meet each other and to explore the potential for a business relationship.
Right. You want to make sure that there's a match, Don, you know.
And, right.
It's interesting, you know, something that I forgot to mention from last week, you know, when we had Dr. Needham on the show, you know, they were actually, they've been tagged the eHarmony of franchising.
Right, yeah.
You know, and it just made me think that you want to make sure that it is an appropriate match on both ends, you know, because
right.
How many times have we said it? 1,000 times that, you know, this thing is really almost as big, and we've compared it to a marriage, you know?
Right. And this comes up all the time in my business with helping people with franchise financing nationwide, because we can't move forward with someone. Obviously, they made their decision on the franchise, and they have the okay, and they've gone to the Discovery Day. because that's an important step in their decision-making process. But it goes on here, Marty. It says, the vast majority of franchise companies want to meet you because they are going to possibly engage in a long-term relationship.
Right.
While this seems like an important step in the franchise purchasing process, it's important to realize that only about 70% of prospective franchisees will participate in a Discovery Day event prior to purchasing a franchise.
Interesting.
That's kind of surprising.
Sure, absolutely.
From a best practices standpoint, 100% of prospects should be visiting the franchise company before making a decision that will obligate them for many years to come and typically before making such a significant personal and financial investment.
Right. And, you try to think of the reasons why wouldn't you want to go to a Discovery Day. I mean, the only thing I can think of is, I guess, the investment. But I think it would be nuts not to go to one if you're serious about purchasing a franchise.
Yeah, I guess people are maybe so confident that they're going to move forward with it. They've done all the research. There's no problems. But, you still want to meet some of the executives and top people that you're going to be working and dealing with face-to-face.
It's so important, Absolutely.
Says one of the primary reasons to make this visit is that most prospective franchisees are emotional franchise buyers. They will buy franchises based on their excitement about the process. Often their research on a concept is imperfect. Sometimes they do not conduct meaningful due diligence and may not even read the required disclosure documents. They are motivated to be the boss and to be independent. There's a lot of truth to that,
Right, absolutely.
You're just so excited. You like a concept. You rush into it. They are excited by an anticipated financial return, and the fun and excitement of owning their own business. The goal for the prospective franchisee looking at any franchise is to become the logical franchise buyer in the process. Beyond the fact that attending Discovery Day better equips their prospective franchisees to assess their values, personality, and cultural fit with the franchise organization, the Discovery Day should give prospective franchisees a basis to assess that day. And it goes over a few things here. One, that they have a meaningful understanding of the company and business. So these are some of the important steps of the Discovery Day. One is have a meaningful understanding of the company and business. Two, can choose the franchise business that best matches their background, interest, income desires, and lifestyle objectives. Three, can enhance their ability to conduct thorough due diligence with other franchisees. This includes validating the financial investment information and possible financial return of the franchise concept. Only about 80% of prospective franchisees will talk to existing franchisees in this process. You should talk to franchisees about their businesses. Yeah, that's a no-brainer. That should be 100% that you at least speak to some other franchisees when you're, looking at a franchise.
Absolutely. When we had Julie on the show, what was she saying? It was the number, I think she said she should call up to like about 60.
Right.
I mean, if there were that many, again, not all franchises have, that many franchisees at that point.
Right.
But, absolutely. It's just so important. And again, that's information should be there in the FDD.
Right. Four is can now do better research to compare this franchise offering to competitors. And five can carefully review the UFOC, now called the FDD, and franchise agreement. The objective of the Discovery Day event is to build a better foundation to assist in your decision-making process. Discovery Day is not a decision day, and it should be a significant red flag to you if the franchise company encourages you to act upon a final and binding franchise purchasing decision at that meeting. In a perfect franchise purchase process, there shouldn't be a sale. Rather, there should be an agreement between the franchise company and the prospective franchisee to their mutual long-term benefit as a result of an effective Discovery Day and in response to meaningful due diligence on everyone's part. So, Discovery Day is important. You can really, just get a lot towards making your decision on attending this.
It's really like an interview, Don. Again, as you mentioned,
on both sides, yeah.
On both sides,
yeah.
I mean, that's how you really have to approach it. The franchisor doesn't have to accept you. And I've done many interviews, I won't say any names, but with certain franchisors where, they just felt it wasn't a match, with the
right.
franchisee. And, again, that could be a disaster if it's not a match, You have to make sure
right.
that this is somebody who is certainly willing to follow the system, and again, going back to last week's show with Dr. Needham, he asked the question, when you're buying a franchise, you have to ask yourself, are you a coachable person? Because not everyone is.
Right.
That's
this is
fantastic.
Just such a key decision, financially. It's a long-term relationship. Put in the due diligence. Make the calls, do everything you can. Even if you think it's a no-brainer, you still just make sure you don't leave anything unturned.
Absolutely.
Also, Marty, here we like to always go over some stats and things. This is a list here of the top 10 franchises for 2007. Every year, Entrepreneur Magazine ranks the top 500 franchises in the nation, and their top 10, one, of course, is a Subway.
Right, absolutely. Play.
Two Dunkin' Donuts, three Jackson Hewitt Tax Service. Then you have 7-Eleven, and then the UPS store, also known as mailboxes, etc. At six is Domino's Pizza. Seven, Jiffy Lube International. Eight is Sonic Drive-In Restaurants.
Really?
To become real big around the country. Yes, Sonic Drive-Ins.
Interesting.
Nine is McDonald's. And then 10 is Papa John's. And there's a whole bunch of reasons, I guess, how they rate and how they judge the top 10. Because you think that, McDonald's number nine, shouldn't they be number one or two? But
it depends, yeah. It does depend what source you're actually looking at. The two that I usually refer to is the one by Entrepreneur, of course, and also Franchise Times magazine, which is a fantastic publication on franchising.
Right.
But their numbers are different. I think McDonald's actually came up number one. I'm going to have to double-check that.
Right.
On their list of, I think they have the top 200 franchise opportunities.
Yeah, we'll have to get a few of the lists because they all have their different criteria for judging.
Right, absolutely.
But I imagine some of the ones we just mentioned are going to be on the in the top list of several different lists.
Sure, absolutely.
Here's something, Marty, from our friend Julie Bennett, who we had on the show a few months back. She wrote the book with Franchise Times Guide to Selecting, Buying, and Owning a Franchise, and we've talked about her book a little bit. And she has these sections in the book called Ask the Professor. And one section was, how has franchising changed since you first became involved? Asking her. She's been really in franchising for a long time. She says here, there seems to be more thought put into training franchisees and executives in franchise systems today. And it's interesting. The IFA's Institute for Certified Executive Awards, the CFE credits, to people who complete approved courses from a variety of course providers. They're just, just more, foundations and groups and stuff to help people in franchising. There's,
right, absolutely.
There's the Women's Franchise Committee, the Women's Franchise Networks, IFA Franchise Business Network, all different types of things to help people.
Oh, yeah, there's minorities in franchising, right?
Right.
Sure. We've actually mentioned a lot of them, sure. This is great.
She talks, too, franchising has evolved to keep up with technological advances and changing demographics. Franchisees today are more sophisticated than they were 20 years ago, and there are fewer mom-and-pop franchisees. Franchising trend that will continue into the foreseeable future is the growth in multi-unit and multi-brand ownership, like what we talked about before. There's an ever-increasing number of franchisees who own more than one unit and even more than one brand. And I see that a lot. People who are looking to diversify or establish in one franchise, and they want to invest and see a nice opportunity with some other type of franchise.
Right, absolutely.
Three, many U.S. companies have begun to look elsewhere for locations to sustain their company's growth, as the traditional domestic market is rapidly reaching the saturation point for mature franchise systems. In the last 10 years, a number of franchisors have taken their concepts into foreign countries. So that's been a big change.
We've seen that a lot, especially over the last year.
Right. Additionally, she says she's seen more and more global concepts entering the U.S. market. So many franchise systems overseas coming to the U.S. And growing.
That's true. In fact, when we had her on the show, Julie, remember she was talking about the the upscale porta potties from Spain.
Right.
Just very interesting.
Right. As now probably being a successful franchise here.
There you go.
Then the last part she mentioned about the number of opportunities for women and minorities in franchising. Even though women and minorities make up only a small percentage of franchisees today, the number has been increasing steadily since she's been involved in franchising. Many people believe that the underserved minority population represents the future of franchising.
Right, absolutely. I think George Nadeff even mentioned that when we had him on the show, Don.
Right, yeah. So this is pretty interesting, her perspective and some of the big changes in the industry in the last 20 years or so.
That's great. It's such an informative book, isn't it? I mean, we could really reference something from that book. I mean, probably as long as we do the show.
Right. Yeah.
Something in there, you know.
Right.
She did such a great job writing that book. So, but today, Don, we have a great show because we're meeting with franchise attorney Nancy Lenard, and Nancy's going to discuss what a franchisee should look for in reviewing the lease for the franchise location and why it's so important to use an experienced leasing attorney to do that review. Hey, Nancy, good morning. Welcome to the show. Nancy? Hey, Nancy. Ah, I think I lost her, Don.
Okay.
I'll have to wait for her to call back in. There's a lot of call-ins this morning. But, you know, getting back to, you know, what Nancy is going to discuss, this is an important topic that affects both franchisees and the franchisors. By having a strong tenant-reviewed lease, the franchisee is in a stronger financial position,
right,
better able to focus his or her attention on the business and not on issues of the lease. I mean, this is something that could really...
like make or break a business, yeah.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, again, you know, as Nancy mentions, you know, you want to, you know, focus on the business. You don't want to, you know, stay up at night, you know, focusing on the...
Right.
So,
and you think it's pretty simple. Okay, I'm renting space. Hey, there's a price, and I agree to it. You know, possibly try bargaining a little. But there's so many components of the whole lease.
Hey,
Nancy, how you doing? I apologize about that, Nancy.
We have a little technical difficulty.
Yes,
how are you
did.
This morning?
Good. How are you today, Nancy?
I'm doing great, thank you.
That's great, great. Nancy, as you, I think you remember Don Johnson. I know, Don, you wanted to say hi to Nancy.
Hi, Don. How are you?
Good, Nancy. Appreciate you coming back on the show. I think it's been a while. I think Marty said maybe it was about a year ago we had you on, so I'm sure you're pretty busy these days with everything.
My pleasure, absolutely. It's an exciting time in the franchise world.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, I want to thank you again for coming on the show, Nancy, and congratulate you. You know, there was a great article in the Costco Connection on franchising. Don and I discussed that article. I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks, Don, and there was a section that you were actually referencing. It was called Fend Off Franchise Fiascos, and I just thought that was fantastic. I mean, that's such a huge circulation from what I understand.
Six million business members of Costco received that, plus anyone who was in a Costco warehouse club could pick it up. It was very exciting to be called upon as a legal expert for that article, and it's still available on Costco's website. You can connect on it, or on my website, you
right.
can connect on it.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was a great article, too, Nancy. I thought they did a very good job. You know,
it was. It was very, I think, very balanced.
It sure was, absolutely. Nancy, I thought a good place to start off is if you could tell our listeners, why is it so important for a prospective franchisee to hire a franchise attorney?
Well, for a number of reasons. And, you know, I get this question all the time because, obviously, you know, people are very concerned about their costs going into purchasing and investing in a franchise. But I think it's critical because often the people that are buying franchises have never owned a business and really have not had a great deal of experience in the business world. And even those who may have been... you know, employees of other businesses, this is their first time being in the business world owning a business. And truly, the accountant and the attorney that they would be retaining to advise them on this and to be a part of their team are really the only people, truly, that have no other interest other than to be serving the best interests of that franchisee. We're on their team. We are there to advise them. And to help them through the whole process and to help them understand what it is that they are investing in, because it is a huge investment.
Right.
And it should be looked at as part of the overall investment. Sometimes people think, well, attorney, it's you know, high fees and stuff like that. But like you said, it's so imperative, it's a must that you have to get the advice of someone like yourself because there's so much on the line here. It's a big investment in a franchise. It's a long-term agreement. So you have to have that expert advice.
I agree 100%. And plus, we're available then to help them with setting up their legal entity as a corporation or as a limited liability company, and to help them with the lease for their location if they are going to be operating out of a separate location and not be home-based. And so, you know, it's a full-service representation. We could even help them with employment policies and establishing employment handbook. I have articles on my website that talk about what to do with employee theft and you know, how do you prevent it and what happens when it happens. So we're here to really help through the whole process of running their franchise from the legal end.
Right.
Absolutely. I love how you mentioned too, Nancy, you guys are deal makers, not deal breakers.
Absolutely. I think that's very important to understand. You know, my background is that I, as an attorney, was raised in the world of working as an in-house attorney for various large corporations, the last of which was Nutrisystem, Inc., which is not the same as Nutrisystem today. It was a different company. They had 1,800 franchise and corporate locations internationally and nationally, and I was an in-house attorney for them. And as such, when you have one client, which you do when you're an in-house attorney, that is also your employer, you better figure out how to make a deal happen, because if you keep saying no, you're not going to have a job very long.
That's right.
So you become a deal maker because you become very creative in how to make the deal happen. It may not be exactly the way it's initially presented to you, but you figure out ways to make it happen. And I think that's very different background than an attorney who has grown up in the world of working in a law firm, where you're much more worried about, you know, how do I protect myself as an attorney than how do I protect my client and make the deal happen.
Absolutely. Can you explain to our listeners, Nancy, about the franchise disclosure document, formerly known as the UFOC, and some of the new changes in the FDD?
It's an interesting time, as I said at the beginning, for the franchise world, because last March, the Federal Trade Commission that governs and regulates franchising nationally issued a new regulation, modified its old regulation. And this was the first time in decades since the franchise law had really changed. And so the old format of the UFOC is being phased out as of July 1 of 07. It was optional for a franchisor to convert to the new format, and as of July 1st of 08, it becomes mandatory. So after July 1st of 08, every new disclosure document will be in the format of a franchise disclosure document, or FDD, and not in the old UFOC format. There still are 23 required items, as there were previously, but there's an encouragement, for example, to disclose in item 19, earnings claims, which there wasn't before.
Right.
I'm not sure it really helps the franchisee terribly, or the potential franchisee that much, because there are still a tremendous amount of disclaimers that will be attached to it, and it's going to be an average or median of the earnings reported among all of their franchisees. And so, you know, everybody's situation is unique and different, and I know everybody as a potential franchisee wants to know, what am I going to make, you know, but nobody can tell them that, because the reality is that where you're located, how hard you work, what are your hours, you know, there's so many variables that can make a difference. So, but you will see more earnings claims in the documents, I think, going forward. I think the most significant change is the timing for disclosure. Right now, the timing is set up, and it's a little bit convoluted, but you had to receive the disclosure document certainly on first meeting, and that's been eliminated under the new rule. So under the new rule, you have the franchisor must provide this disclosure document 14 calendar days prior to the franchise agreement being signed or fees being paid, or earlier when requested. Now, with that said, states have not changed their regulations. So the states that have franchise laws, and there aren't that many that do, but those that do, have not necessarily changed to reflect the change in the federal. So there is a little bit potential for conflict. The minimum that must be complied with is the federal. The state can have stricter rules than the federal, but it can have broader rules.
So has the timing issue more helped the franchisor or franchisee?
Well, I think it's clarified it. It's simplified it. I don't know that it really helps the franchisee, but I think it certainly helps the franchisor in that it's easier. And the fact that you don't have to give it at a first meeting means that, you know, there's opportunities for meeting with a franchisee. Let's say I heard you talking about Discovery Day. You know, there's opportunities to even have a Discovery Day prior to being disclosed. I don't think that's particularly helpful necessarily to the franchisee. But again, if the franchisee requests it earlier, they are required to be provided that document, and they should request it early, so that they have an opportunity. I mean, I feel very strongly that those 23 items, which are required to be written in plain English, be read over by anybody looking to buy and invest in a franchise. I always tell my clients, you know, in particular, read over items 1 through 4, which tell you about the background of the company, litigation history, bankruptcy history of the company, you know, the people who are involved, whether they're kind of fly-by-night people or whether they're, you know, steadily been involved in this business and this franchise for a long time. You know, read over items 5, 6, and 7, which will tell you about all of the fees that you're going to be paying and what your likely initial investment is going to be in those first few months of operation. I mean, those are pretty important things to know.
Right.
And maybe not, you know, focusing on, you know, the trademark and the patent and those kinds of things, but definitely items 1 through 7, they're going to want to read 19 if there's earnings claims in it. You know, look at 20 to tell you about the growth that's involved. That's changed in the new disclosure document. It's a little more detailed. There's a lot of great information there, and it's meant to be read by the potential franchisee. So definitely I think it's very important to go over that.
You know, so overall, Nancy, a little more detailed and like maybe a little more simplified too with the language, or is that about the same?
The language was always required to be in plain English, so I think that hasn't changed that much, but I think it is, it's more detailed in the information that's been provided. It's more maybe clarified a little bit in how it's presented. But you have to be careful, I mean, because, again, the state laws, from a franchisor perspective, the state laws can be different. So I think, you know, any franchisors listening to this interview need to know that, you know, they need advice as well, because the changes on the federal side are one thing, but you also have to comply with the states that you're going to be registering in. So
right.
It's very important. I mean, again, it goes back to, I think it's very important to hire experienced franchise counsel, whether you're on the franchisor or franchisee side of it. You know, from the franchisee perspective, again, to have all of this explained, to have the trademark reviewed, to make sure that, you know, you're even dealing with a franchise that has a federally registered trademark. You'd be amazed
right.
how many times people come to me with relatively new franchise systems and there isn't even a trademark applied for yet. Well, the trademark is a cornerstone of what you're buying.
Right, absolutely.
And so you know, I find that very problematic, and obviously if it's not even applied for, the risk is huge. If it is applied for but not yet registered, and it does take a year for a trademark 9 months to a year for a trademark registration to be completed, there's still a huge risk there, because if that doesn't go through because of a conflicting mark from someone else and an opposition that's filed by someone else, you may find yourself in a situation of attaching yourself to a brand that then has to change.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of concerns, a lot of things that an attorney can do, even when the franchise agreement is not negotiable. And I think that's what people have to realize. You know, they come to me all the time and they go, well, but the franchisor says this document's not negotiable. Why do I need your services? Well, you still need somebody there on your team to explain to you what you're investing in, and even though the franchise fee may be $35,000 or $40,000, the investment is what is shown in item 7. You know, it can be $150,000. It could be $300,000 when all is said and done, between the cost of the lease, the cost of the build-out, and all of the other additional expenses and costs that you're going to be incurring. So it's a huge investment, and it isn't just the franchise fee that's the investment.
I mean, that's a good point, Nancy, just the fact that you can be explaining it, because it's such an intimidating document. A lot of franchise owners or first-time owners have maybe never even put together a business plan.
Exactly.
Just haven't been in business, and all of a sudden they're given this disclosure document that's, at least an inch thick. I mean, you know, it's many pages, intimidating. You know, where do I start?
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely. And I'm going to give you a real quick story if I have a moment.
Sure.
And that is that once I had a franchise system. I represented the potential franchisee. Their document wasn't negotiable whatsoever. We always check the state records of the state in which the potential franchisee's territory will be. We check this person's state records, the state in which they were going to be located. We checked their state records and found that there was a little tiny company not related to the franchise system operating under that name in that person's territory, or to be territory. And we went back to the franchisor and said, you know, there's a potential here for a trademark action, an infringement action, because there's already a little company in his territory operating under that name in the same business, but not related to you. And the fact that in their franchise documents they would not hold their franchisees harmless for trademark infringement actions was very problematic. They agreed, even though they won't change their franchise agreement, quote unquote, they agreed to an addendum covering that situation. So it's so critical to have an experienced franchise attorney reviewing the documents, and you know, we do it for a flat fee. It's well worth it.
And I mean, it really should be mandatory, but the franchisor doesn't tell the franchisee that it's mandatory you hire an attorney.
No, because they don't want to be dealing with that.
Right,
absolutely.
But for people listening, future franchise owners, it's one of the smartest things you can do.
And not just any attorney, a franchise attorney, because another type of attorney isn't going to understand that what types of changes can and can't be made. This is a very unique type of document. It isn't like a lease, for example, which is a heavily negotiable document. We negotiate practically every sentence in a lease when we get it. But a franchise agreement is very different. A material change to the franchise agreement can mean that they have to change their disclosure documents. So we know what can and can't be negotiated, what is a critical change, what is a critical thing to change, and what is necessary to protect our clients.
Right. It's such a big investment in a franchise. Why not make the additional investment to have total peace of mind, just make sure everything you're doing is correct.
If the franchisee is taking an SBA loan or some other type of financing, just include those fees. That's why we do it at a flat fee, so that people can anticipate what their costs are going to be up front, and just include that in the financing that they're going to be getting.
Right. Good. So I guess changing gears a little bit, Nancy, let's talk about also your specialty in reviewing a lease. What are some legal concerns for franchisees in leasing commercial space?
Those are huge because, as I just said, the leases are extraordinarily negotiable documents, and everything in a lease is basically negotiable and negotiated. Because we do so many leases, and last year we did probably over 100 retail shopping center and mall leases, because we have certain franchise systems that we work with, and we are their recommended and authorized law firm for handling the leases for their franchisees.
Yeah.
So we just do – plus we do it as obviously part of our relationship with our franchisee clients as well, and then any other clients that come to us that need a lease reviewed. So we do so many. Everything is up for grabs. I mean, one of the things that – for example, in any retail situation, you're going to be paying, a franchisee or a tenant is going to be paying common area maintenance charges, known as CAM charges, in addition to their basic rent. And CAM charges are to cover the areas that are, as the term sounds like, common area. So parking lot expenses, roof expenses, the common area bathrooms and hallways or walkways if it's outside, and the lighting, electricity, the maintenance to maintain, repair, to replace, any of those kinds of items. Well, we have an exhibit that we attach to every lease that we negotiate or that we review and send on to the landlord to negotiate. We attach an exhibit of 28 items that we want excluded from including in those pass-through charges to the tenant. So these charges are passed through on a prorated basis to the tenant based on the square footage percentage that tenant has in the shopping center or mall. And how that what is included in those common area maintenance charges can vary. And so we say that things such as legal fees relating to leasing the center should not be passed through to the tenant, our client. Expenditures that are of a capital nature should not be passed through. Repairs that are caused by the landlord or by another tenant in the shopping center should not be passed through. That's just a couple examples of 28 items that we have in a list that we negotiate on our client's behalf to be excluded from including. And so that can save, you know, on a tenant's bottom line every single month.
And when you're starting a business, your overhead is so crucial. So,
nope.
And this is, you know, a major expense, of course, so just not what the monthly you know, rent or lease is going to be, but yeah, all those additional things can all add up in a hurry. So,
no question. And even things such as what are included in taxes, you know, that the rental income should not be part of the taxes that are passed through to the tenant, because most leases are what's known as triple net leases, which means that all expenses of the landlord are basically passed through. But we are very careful on what kinds of things should not be passed through. From a practical end, defining what the landlord's responsible for repairing and maintaining and what the tenant's responsible for needs to be very clearly spelled out in the lease, and often is not. The landlord should be responsible for structural repairs, but even what is defined as structural is critical to clarify.
Right.
For example, if you have pipes that come from another space into your space, is that your responsibility or the landlord's responsibility? Who shares in that if there's a problem with that? So if it says that plumbing on the interior is your responsibility, what happens to those pipes? So those have to be addressed. Tenant is typically responsible for interior repairs and maintenance, for the plate glass, for non-structural repairs, and for the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system. And landlord's typically responsible for common areas and the structural repairs.
The average person just, you know, signing a lease wouldn't think of all the details of all this. Just don't think it's going to be a problem in the future. But if it is, you know, I mean, that can really affect your business.
No question. That can cost you thousands and tens of thousands of dollars if you're responsible. One of the things we like to see is that we get a warranty that the HVAC, the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system, is in. If it's an older shopping center, that they warrant it for at least the first year, that it's in great condition. If it's
right.
New, that they pass through the warranties to the tenant. You know, these are pretty important things that can cost, as I said, tens of thousands of dollars to repair. That is very unexpected and certainly will have a major impact on your bottom line. Even something as what seems like black and white is understanding when the lease commences can be very convoluted, because rent can commence at one point, you know, and the lease can commence at another point, and just clarifying and understanding that when
right.
you need to give notice for a renewal, how much time you have for that. I'll tell you something that I consider a very, very important issue in a lease, and it's a critical issue, I think, is that if you know, often franchisors require the ability to have an assignment on the franchisee's default, for example, or the franchisee certainly wants the ability to sell the business and assign the lease, and we like to see that freedom in our leases that we have. Well, it's very, very important that the tenant, whether it's a corporation, an LLC, or an individual, we always recommend it be an entity as a corporation or a limited liability company. And if there are personal guarantees, the guarantors who are guaranteeing the lease be released upon an assignment, so that if you sell the business, let's say you buy XYZ franchise, and, you know, 3 years into the business, you have a lease, and 3 years into the business, you've done so phenomenally well that you've decided you want to retire and go to, you know, Florida or Southern California and live your life out on the beach. And you sell the business, you find somebody to buy it for a phenomenal price, and just, you know, you're in great shape, you want to sign the lease. The last thing you want is to, a year later, be called back to pay rent and be responsible for repairs and other obligations under the lease because the person that you sold to has defaulted. So it's very critical that you be released and you as both the entity and individually be released upon assignment if the business is sold or if it is assigned for any other reason.
Yeah, that's a great point. Even the seller having the flexibility that the new owner can come in and still have that lease, because that might be one of the main selling points of that they have a great location and a real good lease.
That's a huge asset. I mean, we do a lot of acquisitions and sales of businesses, both franchised and non-franchised businesses, and
yeah.
That's a huge asset to any business. When you're acquiring a business, you're acquiring also the lease for that location if you want that.
Right.
Usually the buyer determines whether they want it or not, but if there's three years into a lease that's a 5-year lease, the seller is certainly not going to sell a business without being able to get out of the lease or sell that as an asset.
Right.
So it's definitely an important consideration.
Yeah, so the bottom line is you make sure you have a specialist like yourself review the lease, and I would think during these times, doesn't the franchisee have a little bit of the advantage with the way the economy is? Or
I'm not seeing that so much with rental. I mean, certainly I think you're right in the housing market. It is a buyer's market, but I'm really not seeing it as much in leases. Commercial leases are a different breed altogether anyway. I mean, the rights of a landlord in a commercial lease are very different, for example, than in a residential lease. We don't handle any residential matters. We're a business law firm, but when I see the rights of a commercial landlord are just much greater than any residential situation.
Right.
I wanted to point out, if I may, just a couple other really key things that I think any potential franchisee tenant should be thinking about. If I have a moment.
Sure.
One, you want to make sure that the use provision in the lease is broad enough to encompass what you plan on selling down the road. I mean, your franchisor may tell you to start selling, you may be in the food business, let's say you're a McDonald's franchisee. What if in a couple of years McDonald's says to start selling McDonald's t-shirts or little Ronald McDonald dolls? Do you have the right to do that? And I think that's an important thing. And do you have an exclusive use in your shopping center or mall? I mean, can they put in, five other burger places in the same location and compete with you? You want to make sure that if you need government permits for your location, that if you can't get them, that you have a right to terminate your lease, because otherwise, what are you going to do? If the local governing authority won't give you a permit, how are you going to operate? How are you going to open? So you need to be able to have that right. You want to make sure that the landlord provides warranties for both the Americans with Disability Act compliance, that the parking lot has enough handicap spaces, that the curb cuts are in compliance, that your premises, that the door is wide enough for a wheelchair to come in, that any bathrooms are handicap accessible, that the center and the premises are in compliance with the hazardous substances laws, and that any indemnification, meaning any hold harmless, that the landlord is asking of you is a very narrow one. All of these are very important, that you're given enough notice and an opportunity to fix or cure any default. If you are in default, if you're just late in making a payment, or if you're in a non-monetary default, what are your rights and what are the landlord's remedies? How horrible are they? Because they can be very horrible. They can have a security interest on your assets. In a lot of leases, I see that, in which they have a right to come in and sell your personal property.
It's really amazing. You're right. Just really anything could be negotiated with it. But that's pretty interesting. You're saying sometimes, if say someone is going to open up a Haagen-Dazs or an ice cream franchise, it can be agreed in the lease that whole mall location can't, say, have another 3 ice cream places?
Happens all the time.
Wow.
All the time. And, in fact, not only that, but if there's, let's say, Starbucks in that shopping center, very well might be that ice cream franchise coming in is going to be restricted and not be allowed to sell coffee-flavored ice cream. And you have to work that out.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, you have to be very careful on the use provisions and exclusive use clauses. But, yeah, it's a wonderful clause if you can get it in your favor, but
right.
It's also other tenants in that center may have them that you have to be careful of. So it works both ways, that you have to be very careful.
Right.
Interesting. There was an interesting story, Nancy, with, I guess, Dunkin' Donuts franchisees. Some of them were upset because, I don't know if you've noticed, but Dunkin' Donuts is starting to sell their coffee in the supermarket. So I understood that some of their franchisees were also upset about that. And they said there's something you know better than I about this. I guess it's called a cannibalization clause. Is that what they call it? Or, you know, just
in which the franchise, in the franchise agreements, in which the franchisor, you know, typically in most franchise agreements, the franchisor has the right to sell through alternative sources or alternative ways, through the internet or through other markets that aren't the typical retail market, like a Häagen-Dazs might be a little local business.
Right.
They have the opportunity to maybe sell and open up on their own in other types of venues in the same in their territory. And yeah, it has caused problems. Carvel had big issues with that.
Right.
One other thing I want to mention again with the lease, because there is so much,
if
you do have to give a personal guarantee, there are ways to limit it. And I just, that's probably the last thing I need to mention. But, you know, that and relocating within a, in this shopping center, the landlord's right to do that, again, is something that the landlord likes to see, because the landlord wants to be able to move you around if they've got a bigger tenant that wants to come in, or they're going to do renovations or what have you. And from a franchisee's perspective, obviously your accessibility and visibility are critical, and so you don't want to be moved. So that's, you know,
and then who would pick up the cost of the move?
A big issue.
Yeah.
Lots of times what we do is we try to negotiate that the landlord can only move you to certain places that we feel are just as good from a visibility, accessibility perspective, and that they pay for everything, the moving costs, stationary, phone, everything. And, you know.
Right. You're not having that control on your business is very scary. It's worth all the money in the world to have someone like yourself go over all the fine points. So, you know, something can't disrupt your business when things are going well. Like,
absolutely.
Like you're right, you might have a part of the mall where people have known you're there for years and you go there. If you get up and move, that can really affect your business and can quickly be a downward spiral. So,
no question. And even the timing of it, I mean, think about this. If you were a retail business that counted on the Christmas season, obviously you would never want to be relocated during that season and be down during your critical season, which you may be in 2 or 3 months period of time make your entire year's revenue. Or if you are a Häagen-Dazs, you certainly, you know, in the Northeast corridor would not want to be, you know, down in the summer season. So, you know, it's very critical that you have someone on your team through this whole process, you know, through the franchise documents all the way through to helping you with your employees. And, you know, we're here to do that, to be on your team.
Yeah, this is really a topic that we can spend, I mean, at least a few more hours discussing.
Definitely. I have lots more I could be saying.
And yeah, so we're talking about the FDD leasing and so forth. You know, any other tips? I mean, you know, obviously Nancy, you're an expert. Anything else that the franchisee should be concerned about when investing in a franchise? Just other issues?
There's more on the lease. I mean, you want to make sure that the insurance provisions are reasonable. You want to make sure that you have the right to alter. That's another issue where the franchisor could tell you that we've decided we want a new color scheme. We want you to put a new carpet. Let's say that they want you to put in, renovate every 3 years or every 5 years. Does the landlord allow that? Or do you have to go get the landlord's consent? And what happens if the landlord doesn't approve what the franchisor is requiring of you? You could be in default under the franchise agreement or default under the lease, and they could be conflicting provisions. So
that's interesting. A lot of things on the franchisor, so I can then get you back to the lease situation and landlord.
It's a very touchy situation. It's, you know, it's very important. And that's why, as a franchise attorney who also does so many leases and leasing attorney, we, you know, as a firm, have everybody's focus and understanding in mind when we're going through these documents.
Absolutely. Yes, we have about 60 seconds. What's the best way for someone to get more information on your services?
Well, they can always call me. My number is 215-525-1165. I'm extension 1. Or alternatively, they certainly can find out information on my website, which is www.lenardlaw.com. That's all A's, and in the it's LENARDLAW.com. And there's lots of articles and information that's available on the website, as well as a link to that Costco article that you mentioned at the beginning.
That's great article. Yeah. You and Marty have the Pennsylvania connection going.
Yes, we do.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful day today, isn't it, Nancy?
It is a gorgeous day today. I'm thrilled. Everything's in bloom. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, and I want to thank you again, Nancy. You're always a fantastic guest, and I think Don and I are both in agreement. We have to have you back because there's just so much more to talk about.
It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it, and I'm happy to do it anytime. I've really had a good time.
Great. You've helped so many people today, Nancy. Thanks for your great advice.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you guys again to do this again and to your listeners to help them out.
Absolutely. Thanks so much again, Nancy. You have a great day today.
Take care, Nancy.
Very much.
Bye-bye. Care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Very informative, huh, Don?
Yeah.
It's just so many variables involved. I mean, as you said, I mean, it really could have been a 2-3 hour show, you know?
Yeah, you're starting a business, whether it's a business or a franchise. I mean, there's a lot on the line. There's a lot you have to go over, and you have to have a specialist. I mean, you have to have someone who's in your corner looking at all these details because you don't want to make any mistakes on anything related to all the startup process.
Sure, absolutely. And we also, we actually had questions coming in from the chat room as well that I just couldn't get to, So for the people in the chat room today, again, sorry we couldn't get to your questions, but actually one of the questions, Don, if you want to try giving it a shot, from Michael. He was asking if he thinks it's a benefit of being a franchise or being part of the IFA. Now, I know you guys, Diamond Financial, you're part of the IFA, aren't you?
Yes, yeah, I feel it's important. So he's a franchisor. There's certainly a lot of benefits. I mean, you can go to the website and so forth. It's just it just seems like when people and companies see that you're a member of the IFA, it just gives, it just builds your reputation a little bit. There's a lot of benefits. Even when you exhibit at the trade shows, you get a discount off the show. And, I'm definitely a proponent of being a member of the IFA.
Okay, that's great. Well, I want to thank you again, Don. You did a great job today. And again, thank Nancy for being a guest. And again, we're going to have her back on a future show.
Definitely.
And
yeah, good job, Marty. And people, of course, this interview will be archived. And see all the interviews on franchiseinterviews.com. You can go to gofranchise.com,
absolutely,
our show page. We're just adding to the library, right?
And there we go. So you have a great day, Don. I'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.